Sean Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
I'm just thrilled to have you on, Reagan. Thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Full disclosure, my husband Larry Menzi in New York just raves about you. So he said, you're going to love Reagan. You got to have her on. So I have to give him the credit.
Awesome.
I do want to hear from you about traveling with the vice president. I love seeing all of your social media feed as you're talking about J.D. Vance, talking about the southern border. What was that like as you were doing? That was just yesterday, right, that he was at the southern border. Can you take us kind of beyond the headlines?
Yeah, so, less than just a couple hours after President Trump had finished his joint address to Congress, we were on a plane with the vice president on our way to Eagle Pass, which was once, the hub for illegal immigrants trying to cross the southern border. But it was rather quiet in the town. And, I was talking to one local reporter who was traveling with us, met us on the ground, said this. This used to be the place to be, and it is just so quiet around here now. And so with Vance, we did an aerial tour of the border. He was flanked as well by Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth and DNI Director Tulsi Gabbard. They then went to the Eagle Pass Border Patrol Station, met with agents. They were scheduled for a tour of the detention facilities. And then they held a closed-door roundtable, and Governor Greg Abbott came into town for that. AG Ken Paxton was there. The chief of the Border Patrol came into town for that roundtable. And that was all closed doors. That was private, but they were in there for quite a while. And, I'm sure they had some great discussions, hopefully going to have some reporting on what went down inside of their And then from there, we drove past a large stretch of the border wall, which then quickly turned into the border wall that Greg Abbott had to put up around what they call Shelby Park. That was a state-seized area when he was in this battle with the Biden administration over the border wall. So it quickly turned into what looked like old train cars and razor wire trying to block off the area. Just, we could see Mexico from where the vice president was standing, giving remarks, promising to finish the border wall. And so, that was the big, big really moment for me, was when he stood there in front of this makeshift border wall and said, we hope to finish this border wall by the end of Trump's administration.
And so also, it's the theme, right? Promises made, promises kept. He commented about, you asked him about tariffs as well?
Yes. I also asked about tariffs. President Trump's tariffs on Mexico and Canada have gone into effect. And the first time they were paused, Mexico, I think, took pretty significant action to pause the tariffs the first time. They said they were going to deploy 10,000 troops to the border. And now they're back in effect. That month kind of, came and went. And I asked Vance, what can Mexico do to make these tariffs go away once and for all? What are you looking for? And he said they really want to see sustained commitment from Mexico that they're going to take the border security seriously. And until they see that, the tariffs are going to be there to stay. We don't really have specifics exactly on what they're looking for, but it seems like those 10,000 troops at the border weren't enough for what the Trump administration is looking for.
So I'm going to switch gears. And, I saw that you have pinned on your Twitter page, which is at Reagan Reese, by the way. And you have a picture of you as a female athlete from the summer of 2023. It's Women's Sports Week, and you were talking about being a female athlete and what that meant to you. So I wanted to just bring this forth to you, the issue that at 10 o'clock, as I was beginning, I interviewed a local mom being local to, the Philadelphia region. She's from the suburbs, from Quakertown. Her daughter, who's a senior in high school, won a local race as a top athlete. However, she came in second place to a biological male. And so mom, filed suit. civil rights suit, was in a federal court right here in Philadelphia. And unfortunately, an Obama-appointed judge, Judge Wendy Beadlestone, shot it down. I'm not surprised. When I saw the judge, I thought, oh, you know, unfortunately. But so they continue on now with the civil rights fight. But I just wonder for you, as I saw that you were recently tweeting out Reagan talking about this issue, the way that it's covered, but also the impact on women and girls who are athletes, like Holly Megalendo's daughter, who I just interviewed.
Yeah, and so I am very blessed to have had a really long athletic career. I played up until I could in college. I actually had one more year of eligibility. I played all 4 years at college. I had another year of eligibility because they gave us a bonus year because of COVID, but I decided to move to Washington, D.C. and cover journalism. And it's really remarkable looking back at my college career and just, you know, the fact especially that there was a coach who kind of picked up me and my teammates from all across the country and brought us together to play on this one team. And now these girls are my lifelong friends. And so we went from playing together and spending every minute together at college to, you know, I'm now holding their babies and standing next to them at weddings and being at baby showers and all of these major life events for them. They're at these major life events for me. And just the complete support system I have with these teammates beyond college. We are still very much team, you know, and now I'm three, almost 4 years out of college, and we are still all as tight as ever. And so when I talk about this issue, I just say that the best thing you can do for your daughter is sign her up for a team and give her teammates and give her that community, because I think it really helps foster you as a young woman, gives you the best traits. And so when the issues that come up with women's sports and just the fact that there are girls out there who don't get to have the same experience that I get to have because they're battling things like men playing in women's sports really breaks my heart. Yeah. And it's hard to cover as a journalist because I feel so closely and passionate about these issues. Yeah. And so, it really is heartbreaking. And it was, you know, refreshing, I think, to see at the president's joint congressional address that he recognized 19-year-old Peyton McNabb,
yes,
who is left with a traumatic brain injury probably for the rest of her life because of a biological male spiking a volleyball into her head. And she didn't get to play college softball. And so I got to speak to her on the phone, and her story really, it was hard. You know, mm-hmm. She didn't get the opportunity that I had that has impacted my life immensely. And that's something that's really crazy and yeah. Sad to think about.
Yeah, and I know that you're with IWF, Independent Women's Forum. You're a visiting fellow with them and also alumna and journalism fellow of Hillsdale College. It kind of blows my mind that you know, just a few years out of college, that here you are. What a journey, Reagan Reese, as you are a White House correspondent and now with this administration, in essence, you're front and center. I mean, traveling with the vice president, it must be thrilling for you.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. And I mean, I'm definitely, in every way, I'm just blessed that the Lord brought me to the Daily Caller, because a lot of the opportunities I've had would not be possible at any other outlet. And mm-hmm. a lot of journalists work their entire lives to be in the White House briefing room. And being at the Daily Caller, we're a younger outlet. We're a smaller outlet. Mm-hmm. And the old editor-in-chief of the Daily Caller saw me over at the Daily Caller News Foundation, and they have a training institute over there. And, you know, I'm very thankful he said he saw something in me, said, I want you to be my White House correspondent, and had the faith in me to put me in there when I'm probably one of the youngest people in that room. But it's definitely a privilege and an honor that will never be lost on me. Every time I step in that White House campus, I am blown away. I laugh to myself. I cannot believe where I am.
And you were actually White House correspondent in the last administration, correct?
I was, yep.
So what is, can you give me a compare and contrast? Like, how many times were you called on as far as the last administration? Because now I think you know, you're pretty high profile. You're getting called on a lot.
Yeah, so under the last administration, and now there were some correspondents who had come before me who had a bit of a rocky relationship with the Biden administration. So when I spent the last year of President Biden's administration covering him, there was a relationship to be repaired that was difficult to repair.
Mm-hmm.
So I only got to ask President Biden one question, to which he didn't even give me a verbal response. He just shook his head. And then I was called on in the White House briefing room three times. And two of those times were because there was a light dusting of snow in Washington, D.C., which shuts the city down. And no one really showed up to the press briefing. I was one of those people. I'm from upstate New York. I'm not afraid of the snow. And essentially, Karine Jean-Pierre had no one else to call on but me, giving me the opportunity. And we had a moment about the border wall that went viral, yes. And then I never got called on again.
And so what do you say, you know, what was your personal reaction when you saw, you know, Caroline Leavitt and that famous moment where she talked about the fact that it's a new day and that they want to call on new media and not the same old, same old? What was your, you know, when Caroline Leavitt announced that, what was your reaction?
Yeah, I mean, it's refreshing, and I'm very thankful for the opportunities I'm getting now with the Trump administration. You know, definitely, it really is night and day, and there's a lot of squawking, I think, from the legacy media about the White House's media approach and that they're only calling on outlets that are favorable to them, which isn't true. Caitlin Collins of CNN gets called on pretty much every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the fact that they're taking over the White House press pool and letting more outlets come into the Oval Office. They come on trips, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, in theory, no one likes the idea of the government controlling who gets to cover the president.
Mm-hmm.
But the legacy media had this coming and absolutely deserves it. They did nothing to stand up for me or any of my colleagues who weren't called on for, you know, over a year in the White House briefing room, or, you know, only get to go in the Oval Office every so often, where there are sometimes mainstream media outlets that get to go into the Oval Office every single time. But the chance that when the AP has some problem with the White House, the legacy media was up in arms and doing everything they could to protect them. And so it really should have not come at any surprise to them that smaller outlets, new media outlets, have become absolutely fed up and that they were definitely being biased and squashing the little guy in the briefing room. They weren't representing all media outlets in that room. And so when they complain about this, they really have no one else to blame but themselves. And there was some emails that went around, and one of the reporters who's frustrated about this and a member of the WHCA said to the president of the WHCA, "How did you not see this coming? You knew this was going to happen. We should have had a plan." And so it's really just across the board, whether you were a legacy media outlet or not, you should have just seen this coming, that this change was going to happen. They have no one else to blame but themselves.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I saw yesterday, and I think you reposted this on X, but I saw that J.D. Vance News, they were asking the question, and I'm wondering if this is a thing, that there were comments or they were asking the question, should White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt continue wearing the cross during press conferences? Is that any sort of an issue?
I don't think I saw this. That's unbelievable. I never take my cross off. of course, that would be a thing that people would talk about. I'll use this to highlight that I think the administration is paying attention to people of faith, which is very important. Yesterday, Ash Wednesday, we're at the southern border, and J.D. Vance had a chaplain waiting for him before he boarded Air Force Two to end his trip to the southern border. And he was able to get his ashes And I'm very thankful that Vice President Vance's team let me get my ashes from the chaplain before we got on Air Force Two to leave. I've never missed an Ash Wednesday, and I was very concerned about how I was going to be able to fit this into my schedule. So the fact that we had that accommodation, I think, speaks volumes to just how this administration treats people of faith.
That's beautiful. Okay, so what are you giving up for Lent?
Oh, I'm giving up Instagram Reels. I don't have TikTok for obvious reasons, but I am giving up Instagram Reels because I've used that to kind of just scroll and turn my brain off, and it needs to go.
Well, listen, Reagan Reese, thank you so much. We hope that you come back again. Just love following you, and what an incredible opportunity. You're a great reporter and journalist, but Reagan, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.